Sales?
Yes.
A massive cup of coffee you never got to drink on Saturday morning.
Indeed.
At the airport, you and I, at 6 o'clock. At the Caltrain, close to 10. Your first ever experience on that first world magnificent transport system. You loved it. Two lofters. The Lofters Proto Hotel, which was our saving grace, or my saving grace, to be able to file a copy. Wonderful hospitality from Clinton van der Berg.
Mm.
When he was still beautiful and bright and looked all kind of healthy, and then we watched the blood be drained out of him in the press box as the Stormers went for their fourth try, the bonus point, the win. Wonderful, wonderful vibe at Lofters. 33,000 people there. It would have been more, but for the rain, and also the school's weekend started. Haasfontein were in action. Waterkloof, Uffies were in action. And school's rugby is so big up in Pretoria. So they would have got 40,000 plus, but still a great vibe, a great win for the Stormers. I know you're on your way to training in the next couple of hours. It's going to be an incredible atmosphere. If the wonderful trip back on the plane is anything to go by, the boys were in good spirits. I think they sang that Stormers song about 23 times. I think I know it by now.
Yeah.
Just as an observer.
Suzzy's lost his voice.
Suzzy's lost his voice. He's a bit now Piri Weepu. He was there to lead the haka.
Yeah.
Eh? Is he there to lead the song?
Mate. He's playing some good rugby, but you also can't drop him ever, mate, because you've got to have him for the
song. He's got to be there for the song. He's brilliant, okay? And the few stragglers that were on the plane with us, they thought this was just magnificent. They were getting a live two-hour show. Got home, switched on the telly, saw a penalty try being, I saw 27-17 into France. Penalty try, could watch this. Made myself a cup of rooibos tea. Watched that second half, an incredible finish to an incredible Six Nations. Then the Blitzbocker go and they win the World Series in New York. Our good mate Monty was there. He celebrated his birthday on Sunday the 15th. He's a brand El Centurion. I said I'd give him a big plug if you don't know what it is. El Centurion. Because he was the first El Centurion for the Springboks.
Yeah.
El Centurion 102, that's the name of the amount of tests that Monty played. So he was in New York with Dee, his partner, promoting his brand, but also supporting the Blitzbox and having his birthday. New York, New York. He did it his way. And a great birthday gift for Monty that the Blitzbox would win. Beat Fiji in the final. The two best teams in the World Series. A league points of two separated them going into the series. Fiji had the two-point advantage, or the two points differential advantage.
Yeah.
And the Blitzbox won it. Then the biggest result in a school system, Stellenberg beating Paul Jim 29. We're going to get to that a bit later. And then obviously the one that you just haven't stopped talking about this morning when you walked in here, and all of a sudden you were no longer just a Nell and a Zealand Nell. You were Portuguese. You were Portuguese.
Ah, fantastic.
What happened there?
Os Lobos. They beat, what are they called? Los Lelos or whatever. They beat Georgia. They beat Georgia in basically the second tier Six Nations, the European Championship. And massive win for Portugal. Spain also finished third in the tournament. They won the third, fourth place playoff. So a big rise there on the Iberian Peninsula, mate. They're coming.
But now it all came out in the wash, as to say. All the drug testing, the guilty drug testing within Georgian rugby, the national team, the coaches, the government, everyone was involved in it. The first time World Rugby reacted and said, enough! They lose Rugby Europe's effectively first division title for the first time in 8 years.
Mate, I'm just waiting for the rest of the world to wake up to what's in the Nando sauce, mate. Clearly, there's something in there that extra hot, mate. There's something in there because all the South Africans are eating Nando's and probably most of the Portuguese.
Well, it was a great day for Portugal rugby. They've really improved on the seventh circuit, as have Spain. And then to get this rugby Europe title, you could see what it meant to them. But I'm going to ask you a little bit of trivia. So you told me Lacazette was the Portuguese coach. He was a former French winner at the 2023 World Cup, where they had a stunning victory against Fiji, I do recall, and
yes,
pushed a few other teams. The coach of Portugal now is one Simon Mannix of New Zealand.
Mate, you've got a story to tell about
Well,
Simon
Mannix. You tell me what you know about Simon Mannix.
He played for the All Blacks, mate. Just off the top of my head, I'm going to guess that his middle name is James. He's 54 years old, and he was born in Lower Hutt, New Zealand. But I mean, I'm just spitballing. I could be wrong. He's about 6'3", 184 pounds, and went to St. Patrick's College. So good stock.
Good start. The fact that you're telling me in pounds would mean you may be having an eye on Wikipedia there. The interesting story about Simon Mannix was that he was picked for the All Blacks by John Hart. Picked for the New Zealand Colts and for the All Blacks. So they thought he was the second coming in terms of fly-offs in New Zealand. And he was picked to go on tour just before his 19th birthday to France and the UK. And they played him in the opening game in France against a French select 15, which is always like another test side there. Mm. And the All Blacks lost.
Mm.
And he had an indifferent tour. And basically he was then felt he had to go back to under 21 rugby, Colts rugby. So having played for the All Blacks at 19, then struggling to get into the Wellington team at that stage.
Yep.
And he was left out of the 91 World Cup squad. And he was basically an ex-All Black at 19.
Insane.
And he played seven or eight tour games. And then in 1994, they decided, we've got to bring him in. Grant Fox had retired in 1993 after the successful series against the Lions. Let's bring Simon Mannix back now. He is 23 going on 24 at that stage. Maybe he's learned his lesson. They picked him against France.
Mm.
And they lost at home. And he never played for the All Blacks again. Bishop came in, played that second test, and missed the touch finder in the last minute. And that's the try from the end of the earth. France won the series. I happened to be in the press box that day. Glorious day for the French. Philippe Saint-André. And the guy said at age 25, that's me. I'm out of here. And off he went to Europe. Great wow. Britain in Europe, and then started playing everywhere there, and then went into a coaching career that took in Munster, it took in a few French club sides, and he's ended up with Portugal at 54, and he's just won Rugby Europe's title.
Good for him, mate.
Incredible story if you think where it started in 1990 for him and where it is in 2026, and that's your trivia for today.
Mate, that's a beautiful story. I'm sure that experience of his influences how he manages young players. I have no doubt. Around how he introduces and blood youngsters is probably very closely tied to his experience as a player.
In at 19 and out at 19.
Yeah.
Now, if you are in Portugal and you're a South African, you drop us a line on tell us where you watched the Stormers. Now, where you watch Portugal, where you watch Portugal, and just kind of because there's a big South African support and there's a big South African contingent in Portugal living there, folks with a lot of cash as well. Just a great one. Wonderful for Portuguese rugby. As we said, they've been doing brilliant stuff at sevens and now transferred that into the 15-a-side game. Zells, our big day was Saturday. Loftus, your experience of it. Let's start off with getting to the airport early on the Gout train. Loftus itself, Clinton van der Berg's hospitality, the game itself. You can set the scene what happened in that press box. And just what you thought of it, because you were three away from where you normally are. Normally, you're in the coach's box next to you. Here, you were in the press box
next to you
doing the pod.
Yeah. No, it was fabulous. Fabulous. Probably my view slightly slanted or tinged or tinted by the result. Great result for the Stormers. Huge, huge result in terms of where we are in the campaign. And obviously, the rich rivalry against the Bulls and the momentum they brought into the game. Massive result. So, yeah, getting there was fun. And hitting that Gout train all the way up to Pretoria. I thought the Gout train was great. Mate, I appreciated you talking to me the entire way, mate. Without taking a breath, you didn't stop from the airport all the way to the stadium, mate. We had good banter. And then we bumped into Clinton. And as everybody knows, Clinton is the ultimate pro in the media space. Fabulous liaison, excellent host. Took us to his office, showed us around the bowels of Loftus. That was fabulous. And yeah, then took us out into the garden, the field, the B field. We had a beer with him over there. That was also cool. The place was teeming with Bulls fans. A couple of people wanted us to stop for a few photos. And you could feel the energy. The Bulls fans felt like they were about to witness a very big win. And then we got ourselves to the press box, which is like it's a bit like sitting in a letterbox. At Loftus, because you've got the stands right above you and it kind of limits your, you don't have sort of an open air view like you do at DHL Stadium. So that's a unique experience. And yeah, we watched the game from there. I thought it was a nervy start, but great recovery, great guts and grit shown by the team. And yeah, we had Nick Mallett sitting in the press box with us for a bit, doing his commentary during the game, basically giving us an overview of what was happening and telling us his thoughts around the game. And you engaged quite vociferously with him.
Yeah, I just want to say he wasn't sitting there for a bit. He was sat there for
most of the game.
70 minutes of the 80.
Yeah.
Because he just had to pop down to do the commentary. The halftime. So Kitsy was there to do the halftime commentary with him for Supersport. Jean de Villiers, Dwayne Vermeulen, and Skalk Brits were there with a Vodacom gig. And obviously, Big Skalk was there with Paul Stubbs. They did the Supersport commentary. And then Big Nick, I mean, the master, he was there in every capacity, okay? And Sim, one of the finer journalists in South Africa, stoic, he was unfortunately positioned between in the middle row. I was in the front next to you, and Nick was at the back. And you could watch the play, and there was a 2-second delay, and they showed on the television. And I think, and Mike DeVries, the Stormers head of communications, was on our right. I don't think Mike's ever experienced like that, anything like that in his life. And then we had Brendan now leading the Bulls guys on the left.
Contingent,
yeah. We kind of just basically went mid-range at the end of that game because I think they needed to escape us. And Nick and I were just howling at each other about decisions. I had to remind Marius van der Westhuizen, and he actually went to President Wood in Goodwood in Cape Town in those first few decisions. Those first few scrum penalties in Wilco Lowe kind of tied us up a bit. The penalty try given, I was like, come on, man. You went to school in Cape Town, northern suburbs. Come on. Which could be Pretoria. But and Nick going ballistic. And it was just wonderful, the banter. I mean, to have Nick Mallett basically in the press box giving you a live version of what he sees.
Totally.
It was just, it was one of the coolest press box experiences I've had in plus 30 years. I don't know if it was for Sim. He kept on looking up and saying,
well, he was in the crossfire, man.
What happened to the impartiality? What impartiality? Go Storm. And at the end, on 62 minutes, we turned around and there was Dobbo in the press box with Nick. And they were talking, obviously, the last quarter, high-fiving each other, hugging each other, and like a dad to a son, Nick said, you got 20 minutes, go out and do it. Play those last 20. It was just brilliant. Man. It was just a brilliant, brilliant day. It was a cool game of rugby to watch. A fantastic result for the Stormers. You were back in with the boys as part of the management in the shed. I had to do some filing for the Sunday Times. One of those kind of adrenaline rush days as well, because the systems went down. Everyone else got the Wi-Fi connection up. I couldn't. Christian Kotze from Report is trying to give me 5 different connections. Everyone was trying to help. Hotspot off the phone. I couldn't. I charged over to the Protea Hotel, up to the Sky Bar. Eventually had to order a drink to basically get my copy through. And it reminded me of those days pre all this technology, when you're on turn, you've got to file something on a Tandy on full time. You've got to file it from a Tandy, you've got to find a place that's got some form of signal, and then you hear the connection. And when it does that, you know your copy's going.
They call that
South Africa. Yeah. It was kind of like a weird dialogue kind of thing. But it was riveting. And then just to see how many Stormers supporters were there in the home and the away strip.
I saw a bloke in a skin statue. A men in black skin statue.
Yeah, and then it's all the different ranges. But there's such good support for the Stormers. But there was a good chaos between the two sets of fans. Our guy, Jandre Jabal, our social media manager, he's obviously born and bred, diehard Bull supporter. He flew up for the game. He never saw us. We never saw him. We just did get a message that his spirit was broken. He can't keep on investing his emotional energy in the Bulls. We gave him 24 hours to recover to get back to Cape Town. And as he said, nothing that Ariki and Lowe couldn't fix after the game.
Correct.
But the game itself, why? Why did they do it? We saw Akers and Eugene here before, and they looked very relaxed. Kennedy Timber, your mate, we saw him. They looked confident. And maybe just a little bit too confident in the context of how they've been playing and the Stormers' 3 successive defeats. But you did tell me in the week, Imane is reg.
I don't think they were too confident. I think Akers knew this is one of those games that, you know, these derbies, it's a great leveler. It's a cliche, but it's true. And I think Darby said it in the build-up to the game. Like, what's happened before will have very little bearing on this game. Once the whistle blows, it's game on. And I think we saw that in the game. That first quarter, the Bulls were on top and in control. And then the Stormers bounced back quite nicely. But, yeah, I think Aka seemed to have like a, I thought he had a sort of good feel for like, this thing is on a knife's edge. As much as the Bulls had massive momentum and the narrative was very much, this is a Bulls are favorites kind of game. That's, we've spoken about that too. That is the worst place to kind of be in going into a derby. So, yeah, I mean, if you told us before the game it was going to be this margin of victory, we would have said 100% we'll take that, obviously, to bank the full points and finish the round in second place on the standings after 12 games. Fabulous.
Well, 9 wins from 12, and it stopped that cycle of a fourth successive defeat.
Yeah.
South African League Conference finished. It would have dropped the Stormers down to potentially seventh on the table. That's the fine margins at the moment between...
Yeah,
second, Stormers on 41.
And sixth.
Yeah. And sixth. Yeah. So one game basically in it. Two but that's points. The game they had to make up. The Bulls still stay eighth. They've got a great run in the Bulls. I think the Bulls are capable of winning all six games now and really being there close to a top four as
Brilliant.
Well. And again, we know once we play the international teams and all of a sudden you see a dominance that you don't quite see when these heavyweights cancel each other out, because our forwards are that strong, that imposing, that it does look like a different team that plays against some of the I wouldn't say the lesser teams, but not the Leinsters or the World or the Glasgows within the league context.
Mm.
And then they play each other and say, why can't they do that against the Lions or against the Sharks or against the Bulls? It's because of the strength of our South African forwards and the physicality and the derby elements.
Totally.
But the Bulls, that first 20 minutes, the potential of the Bulls to be 21-0 up was there. They score in the first 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And Kirtley Aronson, brilliant under the high ball, wins it back. They go coast to coast, but also not just lateral. They're taking it up as well. They're taking the contact, winning those early collisions, finding a lot of space. And in terms of their width that they were playing at, went round that Stormers defense. Kirtley Aronson, just a beautiful try. One of the tries of the tournament. A call back because of a marginal knock that in real time you probably wouldn't have seen it. Technically the right decision, but you've seen those ones get given 10 times in a game when there's no try being scored. Mm. So TMO influence again. Then they had the Stormers came back, Hartzenberg.
Yep.
Just foot in touch. Again, most of that given in real time. Two great tries cancelled out because of TMO intervention. Our bugbear, TMO intervention for anything when there's a try involved, but nothing when there's no try involved, but the same mistakes happen. Again, Hartzenberg denied. Sasha, Feinberg, and Gomezulu's pass, still believe it wasn't forward. It was instantly called forward. There was no replay. He got penalized for chirping. 7-0 to the Bulls, and then they had opportunity to score again. They turned down a couple of kicks at poles, and then two yellow cards within 3 minutes for the Stormers. To play the Bulls 8-on-8 is a challenge at Loftus. 6-on-8.
Insane.
I just thought, they're gone here. This will be a 45-20 game. It's going to be gone by halftime. But I don't know if the Stormers would have addressed anything, because they could say we were down to six guys. Who wins then?
Mm.
Wow. That's when it turned. And that's potentially where the rut stopped and the season has turned for the better, is the guts and the mongrel and the desperation that they showed to then go into the halftime 10-7 up and put that doubt into the Bulls' minds.
Yeah,
Akers did say in the change, when I speak to Clinton after, he just couldn't believe they were behind, given the opportunities they had. And then withstanding that 20-phase attack in the first 3 minutes of the second half, and thereafter it was just one way. You did all your analysis on the Bulls and how the Stormers should play. What do you think the Stormers got right that then potentially haven't got right in the games against the Sharks, and no different opposition than the Lions, and where the Bulls are potentially exposed?
So, yeah, I mean, if you'd watched the game, you were sort of sprinklings of boos as the game sort of wore on, and the Stormers stuck to their kicking game. You know, I think people wanted the Stormers to move the ball a lot more than they did. And I think in sticking to the kicking game, as much as the execution wasn't always on point, the Stormers just stayed with the plan. And I think that created a lot of opportunities for the Bulls to have to deal with loose ball and more unstructured attack, and in a way where the Stormers were geared up to defend there. I mean, like, so we're obviously chasing our contestables and trying to win them, but when we don't, you kind of put the receiving player on a bit of a sort of play what you see situation. And I think the Stormers are probably better in that environment. And I think what that did was it took the Bulls a little bit out of their structured plans, and their error rate went up. And that error rate definitely brought the Stormers into the game. I thought the scrum recovered from a shaky start to do really, really well. It was a huge, huge challenge playing that tight five. And then the line-out was magnificent. 100% line-out efficiency, stole two or three of the Bulls' feeds, and that flipped the field. So the combination of those tactics put the Stormers in the driver's seat, and then you had the magic break from Sasha that really seemed to flip the game. Long-range line break, put the ball into the corner, just beats us to the touchline. But there the Bulls were, having gone from being in a position of authority to now having to exit. And I think that set the stage. You know, that's where the game turned.
And then you look at the Bulls' line-out success, 77%, which is way below where they normally are. Even their scrum success, 83%. And conceding 16 penalties through pressure. The Stormers only conceded 7. 20 kicks to the Bulls, 31 to the Stormers. When the Stormers kick, they win. I mean, I'm not saying when they just 31 kicks. On average, if you look at their matches where they have kicked close to 30 tactical kicks, they've come out on top. It's when they're hovering at the 18, 19, they seem to put other teams in into the game and in with a shot. The thing, again, as an observer watching, what impressed me the most was the discipline of how they played in their game management. That Sasha, Damian Willemser, and Boogeyman, Warrior Philan, that axis, 10, 12, and 15, and Ungerer kind of played to the pattern, accurate and inaccurate at times with his box kicking, but kind of knew what he was doing and didn't go off script.
Yeah.
And you didn't see those suicidal Harlem Globetrotter, if it comes off, it's a great 7-pointer, playing between the 10 and the 22 of their own half unnecessarily. Mm. You saw them look for field position. You saw a lot of calm and discipline in the way they played, given how they had played against the Sharks and the Lions. And that, to me, was very significant in the effectiveness of the Stormers.
Yeah, so it was the Stormers that were coming up and making the double hits on defense because they were the ones defending the most. And in there, there's a level of order to that, right? It's a lot easier to be structured and organized in your defense when you're the one asking the questions, as opposed to trying to carry your way out of your own kitchen across the halfway line, and the other team is teed up on defense. So I thought the physicality from the forwards was massive in feeding that defense and making it effective. And then, like I said, that set piece, kicking game, all huge, and moments of absolute magic from some key players. So, and then the bench, Paulie D came on and was just absolutely phenomenal in his work rate, effort, just his contribution was huge. So, and great to see Brunner start the game. He's back on the field and doing damage, you know. So all in all, great, great, great day. And probably if I had to pick an MVP of the game, for me, it probably would have been Ruan Null. From a leadership point of view, just holding everything together, giving direction, settling the nerves, when, especially after that first 20 minutes where things were quite hairy, I thought he was outstanding.
Well, if you look at individuals from a Stormers perspective, Andre Juha-Fairness.
Massive.
I thought it's the most complete control game I've seen him play for a while. Line-out throwing was exceptional. Mm. Scrumming was as good as it can be for, I mean, he's a good scrummager. He's improved a lot there. Mm. And then just his carries. He carried direct. His body position was good. Seeing him go on the charge a lot reminded me of his dad at his best, Andre sure. Fenter. He's playing for the Cheetahs and the Cats and the Box back in the day in the mid-90s. It was just a wonderful performance. Andre Smith, just that physicality that he showed and the grunt and the kind of the meanie.
Yeah, he's proper.
The guy's in there, he's like a bit of a Bucky's Buerta type role, and you know what you're going to get with him. And then just the aggression as well. I see a guy like JD Strickland. I mean, he made tackles, made them hard. Eh? There was that kind of in you go to the ground, this is your home ground, eat it. Anything. And then obviously the combination of Brunners and Paul de Villiers, like old and the new, combining to really play an effective role. I thought Marcel Tiennessen, so underrated, came in for Evan Ruiz, who was a late withdrawal. He started number 8, comes from good stock, great college. He is a clever footballer, and you look at his carries, you look at his tackle count, they were right up there, and he ran good lines when he had to as well. Just a clever player at 8, and just, I thought, did an outstanding job. And then you just go, each guy just did his job. I know that you talk Ruan Null, just having him back, the combination of him and Damian Willems in the midfield, also very good. So, and then collectively, I mean, the guys just did it. And for me, the thing that was so impressive, and the critique of Durban especially, and Johannesburg was, where was the mongrel? Where was the fight? They look like they were in a carnival match in both times.
Yeah.
But the intensity was there without being frantic at Loftus. I just felt it wasn't this a team coming out and playing with all glory or guts for 30 minutes, shooting their load, and that's it. There's nothing left. They were very calculated and disciplined in what they did. And a shout out to the coaches, to Dobbo, to Rito, to Darby as the primary coaches, and then kind of all the support staff, and obviously you, numbers cruncher, data specialist, analyst, all those things you do. It really was a big one to go to Loftus against an informed Bulls side loaded with Springboks and get that result. It can't be overstated how significant that is in the context of the season, because this Bulls side will be there at the end challenging for a playoff place, and they have the potential to go far in the tournament.
Well, you've spoken a lot about the Stormers there. That Bulls team was loaded with talent. Kanan Moody is a guy who caught our eye during the game. Absolutely fabulous player. But I think the Stormers' tactics kept some of those high flyers in check a little bit. I remember Jean-André Rudolph being an absolute menace on defense in Cape Town against the Stormers. That was taken off the table a little bit by the fact that the Bulls were doing a large chunk of the carries. And then you've got Sebastian de Klerk, who's obviously absolute tearaway speedster. He had some opportunities in the beginning, but otherwise not so much. You know, that pack of forwards, just massive oaks. Marcel Kutsier, Ulrich Lloyd, a huge run to break out of the Bulls' territory. Just so much talent there. So I think they missed Ambrose Papier a bit. I think he would have made a bit of a difference to them there. But otherwise, that team is loaded with stars. And yeah, I'm looking forward to see how they close out the season.
Yeah, I mean, they're a good quality side. The Sheriff, Ulrich Lowe, is looking great. Marcel Coutinho, you know what you get with him.
Yeah.
Nizam Karl, when he comes on, he's playing good rugger again. Rune Okeh is just a superb lock. I mean, that front row, it's all Springbok front row. And Kutli Arendse. Is so, you know, we're good. Louis Bilbery, and we love him. And Cody Arendse and Chesney Colby are cut from the similar cloth. Yep. Just they punch above their weight. They are so good on their feet. They're good in the air. They just know where the try line is. They know how to finish, and they also know how to run great support lines. And yeah, and Kanan Moody for me is like, what's changed for me in Kanan Moody in the last probably 18 months is he's got attitude on the field now. He's like, don't tackle me. I'm going to tackle you. He gets angry.
I love it.
And it's just brilliant.
Great.
To think he's just 22, you know, so he's going to go on and become a massive, massive part of the Springboks. And he has committed to the Bulls for, I think, till 2027 or 28. Very blessed to have him. And then you look at one stage, I looked up and I thought, okay, fullback for the Bulls, Paul Riss. Winner, Boland Lundbo. And from Paul, it's Kurtley Arendse. Then the centers at one stage, they were from the Western Cape. Pollard from Paul. And then Scrumoff was from, we'd gone to Boys Eye, Paul DeVet. And I just thought, like, you know, there's a lot there. And then I looked at on the Stormers side, it's Bishops at 9, Bishops at 10, Paul Roos at 12. It's like a nice fillip for Western Cape schoolboy rugby that they've gone through in the professional leagues and playing for the top two teams, North and South. And then obviously Grey Cottage is sprinkled everywhere, which is on both sides, which was wonderful. But yeah, a great win for the Stormers. Don't be disheartened if you're a Bulls fan. Don't be disheartened, because they will still come. And there were a lot of winners there. Zells was a winner, and I was also a winner, because on the show, I did say 34-22.
Yes, you did.
A lot of people said, we'll see you on Saturday afternoon. Well, I'm still looking for them. I'm not going to boast about the fact that I won the media award for scoring 34-22.
That was incredible, mate.
I'm not going to boast about it.
You called it.
But I am.
I think you should.
Because we know our rugby, yeah. So when we called Stormers to win, it's not because Zells works for them and he has to, and because I love them and I have to. It's because I genuinely felt it in the bones that they would get up for this game. A bit like you just had that sense when the Sharks came to Cape Town. This was, excuse the pun, a banana peel. And then they proved us right in actually winning that game under JP Peterson. And have got a famous win, beating the Stormers back-to-back. South African League is now finito. It's full on into Vodacom United Rugby Championship for the next 2 to 2 weeks. And then we enter Investec Champions Cup for 2 weeks. And then back to URC And back to Investec Champions Cup. Hopefully, you've still got a team there for the semifinals. Don't you think, mate, that it's, I mean, a week is a long time in rugby. And just to sort of underline the point, like this time last week, everyone was high on the Bulls. They're South Africa's best team. They're going to go all the way. And they may, you know, they may be in the running. We're talking about them being contenders at the end of the season. But they now finish the season as wooden spooners in the South African Shield. It's just amazing how things can flip so quickly. A week is a very, very long time in rugby.
It is. But I also want to go back and tell you that when a Munster won the URC in the second year, they ended bottom of the Irish Shield as well.
There you go, mate.
And they lost 8 games going into the by the time they reached the playoffs, but they went on a 7-match unbeaten run. And the last quarter final, the last league game, quarter final, semi final, final, all the way from home in different countries. And they got it. So it can be done. I mean, you've just got to get into that top 8, and the quality of a side like the Bulls and the Sharks, if they get into the top and they have to travel, they can knock over anyone on a given day. You talk about knocking anyone over those Zells. We're going to get to the Six Nations first, but we've got to talk about the Steco Hybrid Power Tool Hero. And the man who's going to introduce that to us is none other than Andre the Giant.
Some players choose a side. They've always said a back can never be a forward. But with Steco, Ryobi didn't just reinvent the rules. It changed the entire game. Hybrid tools for a hybrid craftsman. Steco, shaping the future. 40 years of Ryobi credibility.
And Zales, I asked him, who? I'll talk about this, he said. Give me a gap, unlike you did on the
floor. So I spoke about Rowan Null being my MVP, but Gaza Willemse, Damien Willemse, changed that game in a massive, massive way. And I think his recovery from being run over by the sheriff early on in the game, I think that actually just woke him up. That just lit a fire under him. And I think he just rolled up his sleeves and came back and did some great, great, great things. I mean, he ran that short line for the try, untouched, under the sticks. And then it was Damien Willemse that put through the kick for Achiva Diomani to stretch those long legs of his mate, sprint onto the ball for a great try in the fourth quarter. I thought he was fabulous. So he is a great choice. He is a great choice for this award.
Also, any guy who gets flattened like Damien Willemse did by the sheriff, Ulrich Lowe, rises, as I said, with indignation and fire in his belly, and then proceeds to have that kind of influence on the game. I mean, that's a power tool, okay? And if you talk about a hybrid role, it would be from near death to basically living the highest life. That's what he experienced in that game. He was outstanding. And you talk about the tangibles, Zells, but it's the intangibles, the leadership he brings, the calm he brings at 12, playing outside a maverick, a genius like Sasha at 10, the understanding he has between 15, 12, and 10 with Warwick, and then obviously him and Ron, you're up against a combination like that. There, people ask what changed in the Stormers from Sharks, Lions to this. What changed is Brunners was there for 30 minutes. What changed was Ron now was there. What changed was Damien Willemse had an influence on the game, and that also calmed Sasha to a big degree. You can't buy experience, and Damien Willemse, people forget, made his Super Rugby debut age 18. He's played more than 100 matches for the Stormers. He's played more than 50 tests for the Springboks. He is a back-to-back World Cup winner, the youngest ever. When he got his second gold, he was 25 years old. He's still 27. He only turns 28 in May. I mean, they produced them in Strand, and they know how to nurture them at Paul Roos Gymnasium in Stellenbosch. Whenever I can get Paul Roos into the mix, I have to. Because I'm going to get sacked.
I knew you were going to go there.
And I'm going to tell you why.
Yep.
But Damien Willemse, he is our Steco Hybrid Power Tool Hero for this week. Deservedly so. And you talk about hybrid, he scored, he made a try, and basically he got up from near death.
Hey, I mean, he took the ball up. He was physical, direct, had to be a hammer when he had to be a hammer, made people miss when he had the opportunity to do that, has great hands, can put the ball on his boot. Fabulous, fabulous all-round player.
Fabulous, fabulous rugby player. Very blessed to have him in Cape Town that he Big committed time. To the Stormers.
Yep.
Through and through, a boykie from the Western Cape. Strand, Paul Roos, Province, Stormers. He's only foray out of here.
three matches for Saracens in a month, and he did actually score a try in those three matches, and he was back here, and he's an incredible rugby player. You know, the flavor of the year, obviously, and rightly so, has been Sasha, but look who's at 12, and I still believe 12 is his best position. He can play 10 and 15. He's
agreed.
Played 12 is where he can take a lot of pressure off a player like Sasha, or when Yuri Matia plays as well at 10. Looking at the Six Nations, it's over. France have won it. Thomas Ramos, 48-46. As a spectator, I love that game. And for that tournament to come down to 82 minutes in Paris, and I think what I loved the most was watching those English players think circa 2023 Andre Pollard, because they've seen something sail over the bar. The thing there was they were playing for the pride of a win. They weren't playing for the Six Nations. Right team won that Six Nations. France, over the course of five matches, far more impressive than Ireland over the course of six matches. And I just felt the right team won. It was their 10th win in 30. And our favorite, Louis Bilbary, four tries, nine for the tournament, a record. And Thomas Ramos, that guy can kick, eh? What's it, 28 out of 32, 88%. And that's the standard. If you look at a Sasha, Amani Lebok, Polly's been there consistently in the low 80s, mid 80s for the Springboks. That's the standard. So when your kicker is nailing it, your winner is scoring it, and your pack's doing the job, and you have Antoine Dupont, you shouldn't be shipping 96 points into games. You're winning titles.
Well, exactly, mate. And I think people talk about picking a team. You pick your tight head first, you pick your goal kicker. And I think those are two key elements in the Six Nations. I think England got it right at scrum time on the weekend, generally. But goal kicking, I think they were kicking in the mid-60s in that game. And Thomas Ramos was the difference in that game and has been key to a lot of France's success. Not just kicking for goal, but kicking in general play. So massive, massive result for France, obviously. Huge score. I know you've got a story to tell about Tanu Umaga. But interesting to me was that England played the narrowest they've played the whole Six Nations campaign, made their fewest passes, and scored seven tries. So rugby isn't always what you think it is at face value, but the more you play, the more you score. Sometimes it's quite the opposite. So interesting that England were even in the running in this game. After the season that they've had, the championship that they've had, it's been a real roller coaster. And I think for England fans, as much as they would have wanted to win this and not finish below Italy in the Six Nations Championship, this result, or the manner of that performance, probably gives them hope going into the future.
And the future is us. 4th of July, Loftus. We'll be back there again in that press box, this time upsetting English journalists screaming for the box. They play in the first of their, it's the Nations Championship, or it's the Nations Cup.
Yeah, I think it's Championship.
Championship. They play against England. That's the next time. England, first time ever in the five and six nations. They've lost four in succession. But it was an incredible game to watch, just as an observer, the way it flowed. And that Paris crowd at the start, we know how they can get.
Yep.
And I was thinking, you get 45 points at home in the last game and you lose it. I don't know if they could come back from that. I mean, it's tough, you know, coming back from losing to the Box 29-28 in the World Cup quarterfinal. But small things that define matches, define folklore. Ollie Chesham, who had a great game, gets the intercept of a Jalibert pass. It's a 14-point swing because France are on their way to scoring. Only guy chasing him is 50 meters back. There's three English support runners, and he plays to the crowd. He gives the big salute. He scores closer to the touchline than the post. Finn Smith doesn't convert. Those 2 points are critical. And then when Tommy Freeman does walk over untouched, and he's played well at 13, Henry Pollock finds a way to dash from the halfway line to make sure he's on his back in the photo.
Yeah.
And over and above that, gives the crowd the bird, gives them the, you shush now, we told you so, but there's still 2 minutes to go.
Yeah.
And then Pollock is the one that picks the ball up and tries an elaborate counterattack 5 meters outside his 22, knocks the ball on, gives away possession. And from there, it was only going to be potentially one when France kept that ball, they were going to force a penalty. And they did, and there were three options on that penalty. It's been replayed often. And Mauro Tojo could have been marched back. The ill discipline of England there, the shock that they'd conceded. And that guy stood there like an ice maid, and Ramos, just, where do you need me to kick it from? Was what he was
it's
saying.
Straight over. Where do you want
but
it to go?
Where do you want it? I mean, did you see that guy? And it took 3 minutes for him to actually be given the kick. Now, I've seen some kickers where they whooped that one basically out of the start, okay?
Yeah, he's automatic.
That thing went straight down the middle.
Mm.
If you had sent someone to basically find out where the middle was, that's where it sailed. And as he kicked it, he looked up and he raised those arms and you just knew. And that's the thing that France do have, is they have a nine who can control the game. 10 who understands most of the players off nine. And they've got a goal kicker. And at test level, you need to know your guy is 80% plus. Because if the opposition knows it, well, that's already a psychological.
Well, more than psychological, it's tactical, because they don't want to put their hands in the breakdown. They don't want to be illegal to slow you down. So it brings your attack into the game as well. But I think just in general, like, what France have got is clarity around how they want to play. And they've had that for a couple of years now under Fabien Galtier. And that is the key. It's actually better to have a bad plan and be 100% invested in it, in executing it and playing fast in that plan, than to be in the sort of limbo that England has been in of late and that a lot of teams find themselves in when it's decision by committee. And I think France's ability to know exactly what they're going to do, when they're going to do it and how they're going to do it gives them a lot of impetus and a lot of confidence.
When they get a penalty, Thomas Ramos doesn't hesitate. He just points to the uprights. And I think France know exactly what they're going to do at certain parts of the field.
And in that clarity, you know, breeds confidence and momentum in the sense that Ramos knows he's got to work on his goal kicking this week because he's probably going to have 6 or 7 shots at goal during the game. And I think that's key to their success. So England still seem to be searching for their identity in terms of how they want to play and who's going to be the guy to run that game. Who is their best flow off? How do they go forward with that? Is Pollock going to be a bit part player off the bench? Is he going to be front and center in the middle of this team? What's the future for the veterans there? Lots of questions for England to answer.
Also, in the euphoria, or the nearly euphoria, could come a complication. Because they go to Paris, they lose a game that everyone expected them to lose given the form they've had. And the decision becomes quite easy. We need to make a change at the top. It hasn't worked the minute we've come up in pressure situations and we've lost big games. Now a team that lost away to Italy goes to Paris, looks transformed, scores 7 tries, but also against a different type of opposition that does allow you opportunities because of the way they play.
Mm.
And it's like, wow, we should have had a 46-45 famous win. And then they come to South Africa. And it's like, maybe that was just a night of extreme exaggeration. They are, would be now in two minds as to, well, are they on the right track or are they even more confused? Well,
exactly.
And I think they would be more confused.
I think they're 100% confused because I think, and we spoke about it in the last episode, they need clarity around what is this team trying to achieve? And I don't only mean on the field. I mean from like a leadership point of view. Like, how does Pollock fit into this whole thing? And he is quite a polarizing figure, a bit of a lightning rod for criticism around his attitude in that. But he's not a guy that's going to fit in with the way things have been done before because it's just not going to mesh. So are you just not going to pick him or are you going to pick him and feature him? And I think that has implications for personnel across the squad. And I think that's the sort of crossroads that Borthwick finds himself at now.
Well, lots to analyze about the England side over the next few months. We are the next opposition. I think Sam Undeal has finally conceded we are the best in the world. Well, we are. Technically, we are results-wise, and we just are. But you start afresh, as Rassie says. All starts, everyone's on zero when we play them. And they have come to Loftus historically in the past, 1994 being a classic case in point, 32-15. The big day Madiba came out, welcomed us. I was happened to be working in New Zealand at that time, so early hours in the morning I had to get that game, 32-15 to England. What? And they'd been pounded a few times in the build-up by our provincial sides. We did turn it around. Henny LaRue had a great test, 27-9 in Cape Town. Back in the day as Ian McIntosh. And then they went to New Zealand, the box, 3 test matches there. Just lost the first one, lost the second one in Wellington, 13-9. Don't know how, was at the old Athletic Park, and then 18-all in the third test, the draw. 2 tries to nil. Shane Howarth kicked 6 penalties and decided he was Welsh after that. Went and played many tests.
Don't stop, mate. Keep going. Who did we play after that?
We played the fool, man. We played the fool. Wrapping it up on the Six Nations, Louis Bielbarry, 9 tries,
yeah.
Second best was 5, and that was Theo Atasogbe.
Yes.
Have I said that correctly?
Yes, I think you have. You'll have to ask Matty Pierce, mate. Not
he's,
me.
He's a very, very good winner as well. He is. Good finisher.
Yeah.
But Leo Bilbery, Louis Bilbery, he is like a Chez and he's like a Kurt Lee.
Yeah.
Kid's only 22, eh? He has scored 18 tries in 14 matches in the Six Nations. The record is 26 tries from Brian O'Driscoll in 65 matches for Ireland. A centre has the record of most tries, which tells you some winners don't stick around very long.
Yeah. Okay?
First guy to score in 2 successive Six Nations campaigns in every test match.
Insane.
And he's, yeah, I mean, he will be up for World Player of the Year without a doubt. He was close to Sasha Malcolm Marx last year, and I think more the success of the box was what also kind of got our players looked at a little bit more, but just a fantastic rugby player. Ramos did well. DuPont, I mean, he can't do anything wrong according to the commentators. He even throws poor passes badly. You know, like so he's the general there, but a great, great win for France. Well done. They know how to win Six Nations, 10 in 30 years. They don't know how to win World Cups. Yes, you heard that first here. You'll hear it all the time. But a big shout out to your mate, Flocky Siliers, who is the goal kicking and the kicking coach. Flocky's had incredible success. May just be that he's had a Beethoven of kicking that he's working with in Thomas and Amos. I mean, the shock is when that guy misses.
Totally. I mean, but they've got a bunch of those guys between him. You've got Jaminet, Jalibert,
Luku.
Yeah, you've got tons of guys there. I mean, DuPont, obviously a prodigious kicker of the ball.
Yeah.
And Ntamack.
And if DuPont wanted to take the goal kicking, you'd probably be at 90%.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. So, Allez le Bleu. Très bien. They were very good. And congratulations to them. And then a big shout out. We always love to talk about schoolboy rugby. It all started in South Africa this weekend. And for Aoki, who comes from the northern suburbs, obviously grew up in Karlsruhe and then Durbanville. That's me. You were Durban, eh? KZN. And then you relocated. When did you relocate? After school?
Yeah, mid-90s I came here.
So you finished your school in Durban, eh?
I finished my schooling in Durban, but then I came to Cape Town and I did like post-matric stuff here.
We had Bishops?
No. It was like a technical college. Not Bishops, mate.
Yeah?
Not Bishops.
Because you look like a Bishop's Oak.
No, right? Not Bishops.
You were DHS, eh?
DHS and then Pinetown Boys High.
Pinetown Boys High. And they could play back in the day, Pinetown Boys
High. We had Matty Quinn, mate.
Okay.
The speedster.
Yeah. So I was at Fairmont High in Durbanville. So Nick Mallett, our claim to fame is Nick Mallett basically coached us under 15. And Craig Clutie, my mate, as Mallett said, he's about the only guy who could play in your team. He was there, but... the year after I matriculated, they had an incredible year. They basically beat everyone. Craig scored about 300 points. But in Durbanville, Durbanville High has come back to the fore now. Maurice Joubert has been heavily involved there. A lot of ex-Stormers from that area are there. And then Stellenbosch, their primary product has always come out of Jean Lowe Primary, which has been an outstanding school institution. But in the old days, if you were good in the northern suburbs and you really wanted to improve your rugby career, you went to either Boys High, Gym, Landbou, or you went to Paul Roos.
Right.
Now a lot of those kids are staying because it's right close to home. It's co-ed and they're playing. And for the first time, Stellenbosch beat Paul Gymnasium, 20 points to 19, a 1-point thriller in Cape Town. Just a massive, massive win. And shout out to them. Gary van Lochenberg, hugely involved there with sponsorship. His daughter played hockey there for the school and for province. Just a great win. Durbanville beat Lumpo 24-13. And just to see those northern suburbs teams dominating Paul teams, huge in the Western Cape context. Sachs obviously got a win against Milnerton away, 26-19. Anytime Sachs wins, I got to mention it. Outside of the festival when they beat Kez. That seems to be their big one. Bishop's got a win against Worcester Gym, which is Wilco Lowe's alma mater. And let me see in the KZN, because
you mentioned Gray smashing Oakdale, mate.
Yeah, 38-7. That's a big win.
Huge.
And then in Swartland beat Belleville 22-7.
DHS.
Weinberg got a win. Weinberg got a win.
Yeah.
I'm sure Bosch got a win. I haven't seen their results here, so let me know. But okay.
Northwood smashed Glenwood.
Yeah, they did, eh? Kearnsy, big win against St. Charles, 60-19. DHS. They played Mark House. Who wins?
Oh, DHS, mate.
What score?
26-20.
Hey, I mean, you know your numbers, eh? What's the lotto numbers, okay? And then Maritzburg College, they didn't play against anyone, KZN.
Yeah.
Help McCard, 31-19 at Maritzburg College. So a good win for Help McCard.
Yeah.
And then in the Eastern Cape, we never forget those guys. If I look at the numbers there, Marlow 52, Danefeld 19, and Daniel Pinnow, they went down 22-48. And why I say Daniel Pinnow, I think one Ronell went to Daniel Pinnow.
Oh, really?
And they make them tough there, man.
Okay.
They may not collectively be the strongest team, but they produce some good individuals. And I think it was Ronell that told us that he went to junior school with Makazoli and Pimpi. Or Lukanya Am.
Oh.
It was him and Lucky Am were in the same junior school as well.
Okay.
But he may not have been Daniel Pinnow. Maybe he's Brandfach.
I don't know.
Yeah, and Brandfach 131-5. So, Ron Nally, if I've got your school, Ron, it's either Brandfach or Daniel Pinnow. 1-1-1 loss, pick whichever school you matriculated at. And then Jeppe, 29-26 away to Garsfontein. That's a big result, okay? St. Stithians beat St. David's. Parktown win the business. Menlo Park beat Ben Foster 47. You see, we like to talk about the teams up north. Transvaalia went down to Middelburg 21-17. And the big one, and that's why 5,000 people weren't at Loftus, was Waterkloof hosted Affies. And who wins that one?
Affies, mate.
34-20.
There you go.
And you on the Gautrain flew past.
Flew past, mate.
A stadium, and you thought, what's this? And I told you what it was. It was the school
the clock tower. I thought it was from Back to the Future, mate.
School called Athens. You were impressed, eh?
I was very impressed. Very impressed, mate, with the trip and the place. It was great.
And the people. I mean, the Pretoria people are amazing, eh?
Great people.
They love their rugger. And there were a hell of a lot of Stormers jerseys there.
Mm. No, there were lots of, I don't know if they're traveling fans, but probably locals who like us, could smell the winds of change.
All right. And then the trip back, just wonderful. Plane delayed by an hour. Dobbo led the charge onto the bus. The Stormers entertained the crowd. They're proudly singing their song. And I was just an observer there, but I saw you chug a few lines in there. So if you can just lead us with an intro, please.
No, mate. Let me know singing all this.
I am a storm. How does it go?
That's not how it goes, mate.
Exactly. So how does it go?
I don't know. I can't remember.
You can't remember?
My singing voice is croaky.
You know what? You can't remember, but you're off to train Stormers. And I can guarantee you after this that they may have to have you in front of the team. So, okay, that's a challenge to the Stormers. Dobbo, I'm going to send you this clip, even if you don't watch. The next time, give Zales a week, okay? He has to at least be able to belt out the first two paragraphs of the Stormers official song, because I asked him now as a victorious member of the Stormers to give the crowds a hint of what it means to be a Stormer.
The first rule of Stormers Club is you never sing it outside of the team environment.
So the bus and the plane doesn't count?
No.
Okay. You will be seeing it in the team environment. I will make sure there's a clip of it and we'll show you. It's been wonderful chatting to you, Zales. The South African derbies are over, so I know that there's a lot of pressure off you.
Yep.
You do have the Fiery Dragons in on Sunday.
Yep.
We will be chatting about that when we preview everything. It's a full round of URC. And it's nice to say Lions and Bulls charging to stay in the top eight, getting to that top eight. And the Stormers playing for a top place to lead the league. And not be second or seventh. The margins are fine, but an incredible win for the Stormers to get 5 league points at Loftus. As we said, all's not lost for the Bulls. They will bounce back. They're too good not to. Blitzbox, they've won the World Series. They beat Fiji. There is a World Championship that they play for in April, May, and June. It's 3 tournaments, but for now, they are the World Series winners. France are the Six Nations champions. It was a super Saturday of rugger.
Yes, it was.
Zales, we had a long day. How do you feel now?
I feel magnificent, mate. Ready for action.
And ready to sing that song. Ciao.